Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation, episode 288, recorded Monday, March 6th, 2017. Mark Rogers. Triangulation is brought to you by Curry, a real live robot with a great personality. Curry is available for pre-order right now at heycurry.com. That's HEYKURI.com. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people in technology and spend, in my opinion, the best hour of the week chatting together. And we've got a great one today. Cyber Junkies here. C Junkie, CJ, Mark Rogers, principal security researcher at Cloudflare, but a guy who's known world round for white hat hacking, gray hat hacking, any kind of hacking you want. We were just talking before the show about hacking the Tesla. He's part of his head of security, if you believe this, at DEF CON. That's got to be the toughest job in the world. Sure, just invite 1,000 hackers to your conference and then run security. Hey, Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Try 20,000 and please don't break anything.
Everybody, I haven't been to DEF CON, but everybody I know who goes says, do not bring your computer, do not bring your phone, because you will be on the wall of sheep if you're not careful.
So nice to meet you.
Are you kind of now, you mustn't have had a lot of sleep over the last few weeks because of cloud bleed.
I'm actually on my first break since the end of that. We ran through until last weekend and then sort of all fell over and ran out of steam.
Well, I'm very grateful that you could spend some time with us. We should mention Cloudflare, the company you work for, will be an advertiser starting next week on the show. But that doesn't make any change to how we're going to talk about this. But just so people know, the disclaimer is important, I think. And actually, we're thrilled because Cloudflare is awesome. And I've known John Graham Cumming for years, and it's a wonderful company. Let's start with CloudBleed. We won't spend a lot of time on it because there's so many other things to talk about. In fact, I'm wondering if you still assert that Korea did not hack Sony, which I think is a contrarian point of view. We could talk about hacking the Tesla. There's lots to talk about with this guy. So now you feel like CloudBleed's wrapped up?
I think it's going to be a while longer before CloudBleed's completely wrapped up. But I think the incident itself is now wrapped up. Yeah. We had, at one point, teams of 30-plus people on the ground working 24-7, mitigating any customer data we found was tracked down, analyzed, and purged. Any opportunities to purge on scale were pursued. We established relationships with just about every single search engine you can imagine and did everything we could. It was tough because it's a really hard bug to deal with. It was found by one of the world's best bug hunters and declared to us.
Tavis Ormadi, of course, is the bug hunter you're talking about at Google, was somewhat critical of. I thought Cloudflare handled it as absolutely impeccably, given the scope of the problem, and I think Google handled it very well. They cleared their caches right away before they said anything publicly. But he was fairly critical. I think still is fairly critical of your response.
I'm not entirely certain where we went wrong with Travis. I think the initial engagement, Twitter's not the most ideal place to be notified of something this critical, but it eventually got the right people and we got the right people on it. The next question, though, is what do you do in those situations and how do you keep everything under control so that you don't have a data spill problem where all this data was out there and the public were suddenly notified and became a big scramble? How do you get all the right people in place and get enough information? And what is enough information?
Yeah.
And so we were trying to picture all of this and pull it together. At the same time, quite rightly, Project Zero was being aggressive about the timeline. They saw public data was exposed, and they wanted to take action. I think what was a little bit regrettable was in the haste, I think communication lines broke down a little bit because Tavis decided that it was necessary to disclose after 6 days. We did our best to get everything cleared up, but you know, we weren't able to get everything done. However, it was obvious that this was going to be an ongoing operation, so we just shifted gears and then took the long-term approach and spent the next week and a half constantly purging data until we were happy the majority of it had been removed.
And, you know, for people who are new to this, I point you to Security Now, Twit, many of our other shows. We've talked, in fact, with Nick, your head of crypto, on the new Screensavers a week ago. I think we've covered it pretty well, what happened and so forth. The follow-up question is, do you have any evidence that any of this information was, you know, acquired by any bad actors? I mean, of course, the information that was leaked is totally random. So you wouldn't even, I guess there's no way really of knowing, right? But do we see any evidence of bad effects, side effects from this?
Nothing leaves no footprints. So there's always a chance to find some stuff out. And especially when you've got a bunch of folks who used to be hackers, we're always pretty good at turning stones over and looking in the darker places of the internet. And so we immediately turned into a small group doing that. We were scouring the dark markets. We were checking for indications. We were also reproducing in our own heads, okay, if I was going to use this to do bad, how would I do that? What are the steps that I would take? And then which of those steps would leave a mark and how can that mark be detected? And so we then ran mass scale analysis of every request, every packet we'd received from September 2016 through to February 2014 and looked at the proportions for the sites that were triggering these leaks. And by measuring that, we were able to see a pretty constant rate of access. That rate of access told us that no one was hammering this because the nature of the bug meant if you wanted to get meaningful data, you would have to go back to a page and you'd have to keep hitting it. Because the first time you get it, you get a bunch of Cloudflare headers. The second time you get it, you get a bunch of bits of data from one customer. So the third time you hit it, you get some more data. So in other words, to really do something harmful with this, you're going to sit there sucking down as much of the data as possible, producing loads and loads of hits.
And you would notice that. Anybody would notice that. They'd see that in their logs.
Exactly. And yeah. So what we did was we went back through our logs to analyze and make sure, did we miss anything like that?
Right. Good. So, I mean, this is as given the bug, which was horrendous, and I don't think your fault, nevertheless, you know, it's about as bad as you can get. It sounds like there was very little damage done. And I think you guys did a remarkable job. I will say that, cleaning this up. I know others disagree, but I think you did a great job. And the proof is in the pudding.
Yep. So yeah, we're incredibly proud of the 40-minute notification to resolution. I think that's a gold standard that most companies strive for.
Yeah.
What we're not proud of is the fact that the impact to our customers was not something we could immediately quantify.
Right.
It is going to go on for a while as customers look at the architecture of their systems and work out how this could have affected them. And that's not something that any security professional wants to find being responsible for. I want to be able to go to my customers and say, this is how I hurt you, and this is how it's never going to happen again.
Right.
So this one's always going to be a tough one for us.
I think in the long run, this is this does not hurt Cloudflare's reputation, mostly because you know, this is what happens when you go when you put a lot of traffic through a choke point. In any time, there's always this risk, and there are good reasons why you use Cloudflare for CDN for DDoS mitigation, things like that, and you need to do it this way. So I think this is just concomitant. This kind of a risk that's concomitant with doing this. But you handled it as best, as well as anybody could handle it. So moving on. I thought that was interesting. You said that you need to be a hacker to catch a hacker. You have to have that ability, don't you?
I've always believed that. I also believe that anything man makes, man can break. And I pretty much spend my entire life looking, literally, as I walk down the street, you'll see me looking at signs and you'll see me looking at posters. And the only thing going through my head is, what could I make this do? And what would be funniest?
You got the mentality. How'd you get started?
How did most of us get started? As a kid?
Yeah.
I have vague recollections of drilling holes in fridges.
So you were a hardware hacker to begin with.
And still, it's pretty much at my core, I'd say.
Yeah.
I blew myself up a few times, but my original profession was biochemistry, which probably not a good combination for someone of my temperament.
I liked fire a little bit more than ice. I sort of moved on. I spent a few years working as a bouncer, which taught me, I think, everything I need to know about social engineering. And then just got into the world of taking things apart and seeing how they work. Initially, I wouldn't say I was on the lighter side of things, but later on, I found that if you really want to change the world, it's how you do it as a white hat. People are ready to listen. And when you look at the complex problems that nation states face, the only person that's going to be able to dig them out is a hacker.
Right. I said about 10 years ago, there was a hacker documentary, which was never released. There was a lot of drama around it. It was created by Kevin Spacey's group. But in an interview there, I said that forget the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. The future of freedom is going to be hackers. Hackers are going to be the true revolutionaries. And I think we have to have a Second and a Half Amendments, the right to hack. And I think I'm not wrong. I think there's been a considerable effort by the government to keep people from hacking with DMCA and other things, keep people from looking at the innards of stuff. You got to look inside. And the people who are going to defend us are not going to be the people who carry around a rifle, but the people who can see what's going on.
So the problem that scares me is I don't think the world is equipped for a Second Amendment for hacking, because the vast majority of companies out there are shockingly bad. They're still buying pieces of tin with as many zeros on them as possible because a sales guy in a nice suit told him,
yeah,
this will solve all your problems.
Right.
You look across our infrastructure, it's even worse. You know, do any of our mass transit systems have active defenses? No.
No.
Do any of our hospitals have active defenses? No. Do our parliaments have active defenses? No. Our voting infrastructure? No. If we lift the lid on this and we suddenly said, you know what, so long as you get licensed and promise to behave yourself, you can hack, it would profoundly change the shape of the world. But I think there would be an incredible amount of pain because there's way too much damage that's possible without a ton of skill. Just from sitting behind my keyboard, there are a number of countries that I can switch off. And when I say switch off, I don't mean disappear from the internet. I mean, I can kill their power. I can kill all sorts of things. I can kill their telecoms. And that's because there are so many major single points of failure that it's terrifying. I would never do something like that. But we know for a fact there are people out there who don't like our way of lives and who are going to do stuff like that. And that's why I throw all my energy behind protecting everything I can. I do teachings at schools. I do demos of stuff. I've got three daughters, and I want them to grow up in the future that I imagined and not the future that some terrorist imagined.
You just said something terrifying, really. I mean, it sounds like we are ill-prepared for cyber warfare, and not just us, but everybody else. Is it mutually assured destruction that's keeping us from safe so far? I mean, what's to stop the Chinese or the Russians or some other nation-state or some terrorist organization from doing this?
Because the systems they're hitting, they're also incredibly dependent on. If China took out Wall Street, what would the impact be on the Chinese markets?
Mm-hmm.
It would cripple them. They like to pretend that they can be alone. But this world has never been more connected ever before.
Yeah.
But that is kind of that, you know, that was the nuclear doctrine that kept us from blowing ourselves up in the 60s, mutually assured destruction. You blow me up, I'm going to blow you up. In a way, that's kind of, you know, any damage you do. But then there's terrorists who don't care, who aren't dependent, who are living in caves. Is it just that they don't have the skill set yet?
Yeah, most of the terrorists have more of a military attitude. So they're looking for quantifiable damage. They're looking to go out somewhere and they're going to want to cause an explosion and they want to see dead people. If you actually try and show someone of that mindset and obviously that disturbed, how much effort you're going to have to put into hacking just a simple website, I think he's going to get bored and run away and blow himself up.
God, I hope so. it does feel like it's just a matter of time the nation states have certainly caught on.
I actually have to say one of the reasons I'm here in America is because America has, despite all the criticism people levy at folks like the FBI and the other law enforcement groups, America has the most switched on, the most intelligent, and the most proactive cyber defense policy out of every other country in the world. America hires people like me because they recognize the value. America sends some of its experts to conferences like DEF CON and Black Hat to learn new techniques, because they also recognize that our industry and our community is where the center of innovation is that's creating these tools and techniques. And because of that, I would say the American military is probably certainly in the top five of, in terms of most cyber prepared and best equipped for this kind of situation.
But continued education of young people is important, and raising the awareness and developing the skills, right?
Well, and also like every set of skill relating to this changes. I mean, do you remember when you and I were using computers in school? We were using these giant things with keyboards and made.
Mark, I'm so old. We didn't have computers in school.
I don't worry. I'm not far from you. I got the first one was delivered to my classroom, and I remember staring at this thing, going, "What the hell is it?"
I'm more like Bill Gates' age, and like Bill Gates, the school I went to in seventh and eighth grade, the moms got together. This is true of Bill's school too. Had a bake sale and raised enough money to get a teletype, so that they could connect with the timeshare at the university down the street. And that's how Bill started programming. You probably followed on pretty quickly after that. What was your first computer? Do you remember?
My first personal one?
Yeah.
It was either my father bought me a BBC Micro Model B.
Of course.
Which was like back in, like, God knows when.
So many people in the UK cut their teeth on that Micro.
And the first one I saved up money for was the ZX Spectrum 48K.
Yes, the Spectrum, the color ZX.
With the rubber keys.
With the chiclets. But before that, you had access to a larger computer at school?
Yeah, we had Winchester Nimbus research machines with these giant x86 systems with huge disks on them that stored up to and including 10 meg of data.
Wow.
And I remember it took me a week, but I got root on their network.
Oh, you were bad. What was your first hack? Was that your first hack? Do you remember that?
I think that was my second hack. All I did was I created a password program that looked like the one the administrator logged in. And so he just logged into my terminal. I can't help what happened next.
Oh, my God. You had the mindset even then.
We do from the moment we're born. Look for the kid who's climbing the shelves and trying to open gates.
I love that. Those are the kids I want to hang around with. Those are the most interesting kids. Where did it go from there? Once you got an Acorn or a Spectrum, did you continue to do hacking? You weren't online yet.
Yeah, I played until I went to college because it was games and coding and things you could do, but it was all isolated. And Britain didn't really have the BBS scene that America had.
Right.
When I got to college, a friend of mine taught me about this thing called the phone system. And I'd already been kind of probing it and starting to get to understand it. And this was probably like early 90s. And he's like, well, you know, if you do this and you do this, you can make the phone ring. And I'm like, really? And so I'm playing around with tones and stuff. And I find this magazine online which told me how to dial internationally.
2600 or?
Amongst others. Yeah. It took me a month to get my 2600 technique down. But when I got it, that was it. It was just like...
Could you whistle? Could you do it with a...
No, I can't whistle. A couple of good friends of mine can, actually.
We've had Captain Crunch on the show many times, and he's a great old character and friend.
Yeah, Joe's a good whistler. Fiber Optic is my business partner and one of the startups I did over here.
No kidding.
He can also whistle 2600 times.
Legendary, yeah.
Yep.
Like a lot of hackers, phone hacking was was an early way to get into this.
It was the best way to make connections.
Right.
I went from being this isolated kid in a British dormitory to suddenly being able to talk to all of these people all over the world. Right. And it was like the most addictive drug you could ever imagine.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was Mitnick or Polson who told me about crawling through dumpsters and finding Ma Bell manuals, because that's the that's how you would figure out how to do stuff.
I have a great story from then. So one day we were visiting the back of Digital in central London, and poking up out of the skip are a pair of Microvax 3800 supercomputers.
What?
I mean, today these things are like toast warmers, but back then this was like, this is some serious hardware.
Whoa.
So we pulled these out of the trash, and we also found a satellite array that we pulled out of the trash as well.
Holy cow.
And almost all of the disks for the system. So we pulled them out. And we're scooting these down, because Microvaxes handily have wheels on the bottom. And so we're scooting them down High Holborn in central London at about 2 o'clock in the morning, when the police pull up alongside us, flashing blue lights, excuse me, lads, what are you doing here? And I look around and I said, we're just delivering them to the local ISP.
Yes!
And I just happen to have keys for a nearby ISP. So we cross over the road. I've only got the outer door key. So I open the outer door and we push everything in and we step inside the outer door, wave at the policeman and pull the door shut on us. We waited there for about 25 minutes before getting a taxi.
So you got the vax home?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Had it for years.
This is so much fun. We're talking to Mark Rogers. He is a big shot at Cloudflare, where he runs security there, runs security for DEF CON, and has some tales to tell. We will continue. I want to talk about Sony when we come back, because we talked a lot about this in the a couple of years ago, and we never did get resolution on this. It's a very interesting story. Let's take a break, though. We'll have more with Mark in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by a little robot, your little plastic pal who's fun to be with. This is going to be your first robot, your first home robot. You know, you never forget. You listen, oh, I'll never forget that, you know, getting my BBC computer. I'll never forget the, you know, for me, color TV. Your kids will see Curry, a real-life robot. They will fall in love with Curry, and 20 years from now, they'll say, yeah, I remember when we got our first robot. Curry is so cute. I actually had a little time to hang out at Mayfield Robotics down in the South Bay a couple of months ago and played with Curry. He or she, you get to decide. At first, they said it's a he, and then now I see they call her a she, but I think it's really... This is really an interesting thing. These guys are among the best roboticists in the world, and they decided to work with Mayfield and make something that would be a house robot that would introduce people to the whole idea of having one of these devices in your home. This is really interesting. First of all, they said we're going to make it knee high. It cannot be threatening, right? Now, another interesting choice: doesn't talk to you. It understands commands. You could talk to it. In fact, it has four MEMS microphones, array mics on the device. It has really nice speakers, too, by the way. But when you talk to it, it bleeps and bloops in a way you understand. You know, there's a yes, there's a no, there's a maybe. You know, it's kind of like R2-D2. It also blinks. See Curry blinking? That gives her a real... And she looks around. She'll stand... If you're standing in a group, she recognizes faces. She'll come up and stand in the group and look as each person talks. Look at them, blink, tilt her head. You get the feeling there's a real, you want to personify her. It's amazing. She can walk all over the house. First thing she'll do when you get Curry home, she has a charger. When she runs out of juice, she'll walk over to a charging pad and charge up. She'll run for four or five hours with a charge. But first thing she does is she walks around the house and maps the house, identifies everything. She's got an internal map of your house. She can't go downstairs or upstairs. She can't go over door jams and carpets and everything. She's got little tractor treads underneath. So she'll map the house. You can then say, hey, Curry, this is the living room. Got it. This is the kitchen. So you can name the rooms. You can then say, hey, Curry, go in the living room and see if the dog's on the couch. See, Curry has a really high-def camera in her left eye, and she will send you back to your phone pictures. If she hears a loud noise, she will go over and investigate and send you pictures back to your phone. You can also ask for things. You can have her play music. You can have her listen to a podcast. You can have her come and wake you up in the morning and then say, Curry, follow me while you listen to your favorite news show. And she'll follow you into the kitchen while you make breakfast. She'll follow you into the bathroom where you brush your teeth. She will read bedtime stories to the kids. This is a really interesting concept. She's got a heart light, RGB light inside her, so she communicates that way. You can tap her on the head. She'll know who you are. She'll respond differently to you than she responds to the kids. Kids, though, by the way, it's really interesting how quickly they kind of grok her and go, oh, I love this, and play with her. She is amazing. Now, Curry is not out yet. You could find out more at the website, heykuri.com. And I did this. You can put down a refundable $100 deposit right now to get yourself in line to buy the Curry when she comes out later this year. It'll probably be September, October. $5.99 remain due at time of shipment. That is excluding taxes and shipping. So she's $6.99 total. Your first robot HeyCurry, HeyCurry.com. She was quite the sensation at CES this year. Everybody said, I've got to meet Curry. Pretty cool. She's going to be at South By. If you're going to South By Southwest, the Mayfield Robotics folks will be there introducing Curry. I think the hardware's done. I think they've finalized the hardware. They're ready to manufacture. They have a big partner, Bosch, in Germany. So they'll be manufacturing these really nicely with Bosch. And I think the software is what they're really enhancing it constantly now, getting ready for Curry's release. K-U-R-I. Go to Hey, H-E-Y, Curry, K-U-R-I.com to find out more. Everybody said, you've got to meet Mark. You've got to meet Mark. And I'm really thrilled to be able to talk to you. We should mention as a disclaimer, as I will throughout the show, that Cloudflare will be a sponsor starting next week, I think, on our network. But we're just thrilled to get a chance to talk to Mark. So why do you think everybody in the government, including President Obama, said that Sony was hacked by North Korea? Why do you think that that's not true?
So it's the same reason I stopped talking about it. There's one piece of information that I couldn't get access to. It was clear that the NSA had access to classified intel from systems that they didn't want to expose and agents that they didn't want to expose.
Yeah, and so I took it as, oh, we know, but we can't tell you how we know, but trust us, we know.
Right, and so I closed off by saying, you know what? I would have preferred if right at the start you had said, this is the sort of evidence we have, and give some generalities. However, the main thrust of information comes from classified sources, which we're not going to disclose because it would ruin those operations or put agents in the field at danger, and I'd have been fine with it. What you shouldn't have done is passed off a bunch of really weak, easy to attack
crap,
because I'm going to come after it.
So we don't know. But I think at this point, it's safe to say if the NSA is so strong in this assertion, it's probably they have some piece of evidence they just can't reveal.
I think that makes sense. The NSA, for all of their sins, are really good spying on people.
They're smart. Yeah. So, and that kind of brings us to today, because the intelligence community in the United States knows a lot about what's going on in the White House, has leaked the smallest tidbits just to whet everybody's interest. Isn't it safe to assume that the NSA monitors all outbound traffic, all international phone calls and traffic, and has records of every conversation, at least outside the United States, you know, from the U.S. to the outside, and can go back and look at those records? That seems to be, based on the Snowden revelations, the case, right?
I don't think that's true.
No.
I think they have the most that anyone you can imagine, right?
But not everything.
If you're talking about immediately the last 24 hours, yeah. I suspect they probably have almost everything.
Okay.
As you go back, that gets smaller and smaller. I doubt they hold more than, say, a week.
They couldn't.
And I would be shocked if they held more than a month.
Okay.
And it's down to pure storage space.
Even with that new data center.
Yep, even that new data center. We in Cloudflare know all about storage. With the logs that we get through, we're only able to hold a very specific amount of data from transaction logs so that we can quickly pull out relevant debts to relevant information to attack threats and then get rid of it. So the NSA has exactly the same problem. That's why as the story goes, the original project they were building was called Omnivore, because it was designed to eat everything.
Yeah.
But later on, they called it Carnivore because they realized it could only go after the meat. And that's kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah.
If you're talking to somebody who's suspected, or if you're talking to someone who has a relationship with someone who's suspected, they've probably got all of your traffic, and they're probably watching you right now. If you're an ordinary citizen on the street buying a cup of coffee, it's unlikely they're wasting CPU cycles on you.
Well, that's good news. Well, I think the biggest fear that I had and others had after reading the Snowden revelations is that they were storing all this stuff. And later down the road, if they felt like they wanted to build a case against somebody, they could go back and say, well, let's see what we have.
Yep.
Not the case, though, you think?
Well, so like I say, given the limitations, the fact they don't have everything.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they don't have a huge stockpile of interesting things on high-profile targets.
Right.
So, and I would also say, I'd imagine exactly the same for every other foreign state in the world.
Of course.
When Putin made those kind of slightly snarky remarks about Trump, you know he's sitting on stuff.
Right.
At the end of the day, I'd say every single nation is sitting on something to do with every other nation. The question is, which one of them is going to lay their hands out first?
Very interesting. Are you worried about the so-called deep state?
Not particularly. I'm a hacker. I live in whatever environment you guys give me. As long as there's a computer and I have a connection to the internet, I'll find a way.
Tell me a little bit about the tools you use for hacking. Are they the ones that we all know about, like Wireshark and Nmap and, you know, Ruby and Python, that kind of thing? Or,
you know what? There's a lot made about hackers' tools. And when I first started, when I was getting into being a penetration tester, I used to be so freaked out about the fact that I didn't have a really good tool set and I didn't have great exploits. And I thought, however am I going to make a mark in this world? It's like, I'm going to show up and I've got these two or three exploits they've all seen before and everyone's going to be patched and I'm going to look like a noob. And then I realized, actually, the really good hackers make their own tools.
Yeah.
So all of the best stuff, I started out as somebody's personal tool.
Interesting.
They started putting it together with a bit of Python, some Perl, some Bash scripting, and they made something that was functional. Maybe they wanted to check a particular type of port, or maybe they wanted to walk across the whole of the internet and look for a certain word. Those tools evolved and became the big platforms like Metasploit and Core Impact. So I would say, even now, the greatest tool any hacker has is the one that sits on his shoulders.
Your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have your own little pack of tools, little toolkit that you you have stored somewhere?
It drives my wife crazy. I have four.
Four what?
I have one in case I'm going to do hardware hacking.
Yeah.
I have one which includes my range gear in case I find myself out in the desert.
Ah.
I have one for my close contact work with microscopes and oscilloscopes. And then I just have a general cheap one I take to conferences.
Are they like go bags? Are they in suitcases?
They're go bags.
And are they stored? Why is your wife concerned? Are they stored by the door on the way out or what?
Well, so I took over the dining room and turned it into an office.
Oh,
it's now
okay.
More of a storeroom.
Now I understand. So the dining room table's piled with this stuff.
My wife has to put up with things like there's 10 drones in the house.
Oh, my.
There's at least a dozen different computers in various states of repair. There's enough electronics that I could probably build the Manhattan Project if I wanted to. It's just crazy. I hoard electronics, and the sad thing is it almost always comes in useful. So every time she goes to me, see, I should have. Oh.
Now, let me ask you. So is your wife technical? Does she understand what you do?
Yes. She's a software engineer herself.
Got it.
So she would never tolerate me otherwise.
But can she figure out how to watch the TV set? She's got that down. Okay.
She wires the TV.
Oh, she does that. So you have to ask her how to get channeling.
Well, she knows asking me to do something electronic usually means it's going to take 2 to 3 times longer, and it may or may not have a camera attached by the time I'm finished.
I love your mind. You know, when I talk, you're right. That's what matters the most is this questing spirit, this fascination. I got to know how it works. I got to get in there. And the side alleys and trails you follow down without regard to time or space. I love that. That's awesome.
So did you see these buttons Amazon made, the Amazon dash button?
The dash button, yeah.
Oh, when they came out, we were ecstatic. Like a completely programmable board. And of how much?
$5.
So I bought 90.
What?
Every box of like, I'm down to about 60 or so.
And what have you made them do?
Well, so it took a while. Kristen Padgett was actually the first one. She's one of my hacking partners. And she got onto the actual hardware and got it so we could start writing some of our own custom firmwares on it. And so now we can do things like we can get the Depends Amazon dash button and we can make it reach out and slap someone on the internet. It's got a Wi-Fi controller. It's got a programmer. All it needs to do is send a command to a wireless access point that goes off to an internet relay chat, and that hits someone.
It's fairly easy, isn't it?
This is the trout button. Yeah, exactly.
Does it say trout on it?
No, it says depends.
Depends, better yet. Why change the brand?
We were thinking of putting them all over DEFCON this year, just with a big red sticker that says do not press.
DEFCON's coming up in August, so you must be preparing for it already, yeah?
Oh, God, yes.
Are you involved with the badge project? Or?
So I do not design the badge, but I'm responsible for the logistics when the badge gets to the conference and making sure people don't have to line up too much.
Nice. So do you know already what the badge is going to be this year?
Even if I could, I can't say a word.
Can't even admit that you know.
Nope.
Yeah, we have a collection, I think, of the badges here because we send a priest to DEF CON. We figure he's the safest person to go to DEF CON.
Funnily enough, I have a priest on my team.
Ah, really?
Yep.
Is he a Jesuit?
Yep.
The best. Those guys are the God's hackers. They're the originals.
As we've discovered, he's usually the guy who deals with the more delicate situations that arise.
Yeah, sure. I find it fascinating that you were a bouncer because in a way you're a bouncer still, sort of,
yep.
Right?
I learned more in that job than I have in any of the other jobs I've done.
It didn't give you a grim sense of humanity?
Actually, it's not what the door's like. There are a few doors in Manchester. This is Manchester in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Which, if you know your music, it was a particularly active time to be in Manchester.
Yeah.
But what I found was there's a huge camaraderie, and everyone had everyone's back. And there were some unpleasant things that happened. But by and large, the mission was to make sure people could go to a nightclub, have a good time, and come home safely. And we were united in that mission. Half of the team were all ex-special forces from the UK. So I never felt particularly threatened. There were a couple of ugly incidents. I got too close to a couple of knives a couple of times. But you learn, and you move on. For me, it became like the best job. You go out, you party, you hang out with your friends, and you get paid for it.
This is kind of counter to the image that hackers sometimes get of being antisocial. You're very social, it sounds like.
I was totally antisocial when I started. It was hacking that kind of shaped me. The thing about hacking is one of the first things it teaches about is social engineering. And social engineering is all about building your own disguise and standing out in public so that people can look at you, but they don't see you. Mm. And then it teaches you how to use that to get what you want. And I got kind of fascinated at that from an early age. I went on to study psychology at UMIST University of Manchester for a while. And what I found was those skills that I was picking up were also the skills that enabled me to just go out and have fun on a normal basis. And I think probably the only downside was I'm almost always hamming it up because I figure if you're going to play a role, you might as well play a role. So very few people got to see the real me, but I had a lot of fun.
If you watched Mr. Robot and you appreciated the technical accuracy of Mr. Robot, you can thank this guy right here. When Mr. Robot first came on, we were all we felt like it was almost like a homecoming, like finally a show that doesn't misrepresent technology. Thank you, Mark. That must have been a fun gig.
I would say the people who deserve thanks are Sam for writing the show and Core, who's the guy who leads the technical team. So he's personal who's responsible for wrangling all of us sort of more creative and crazy types so they actually get what they want. It takes a whole team to do it.
Of course it does. But, yeah.
I mean, it was an amazing distraction.
How much time do you spend working on it?
It depends. Like the femtocell they used in the last season took me well over a month to build. Not a lot of people know, but I actually built it in my living room, and I got it up transmitting, and I was...
Wait a minute, it was a working femtocell?
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Why? It could just be a plastic shell. It's TV.
But then it wouldn't be real.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Now, normally you think of femtocells as being with the cooperation of the wireless carrier. How do you make a femtocell that it's not owned by a wireless carrier?
You limit what it's broadcasting on.
Ah. So it didn't tie, it wasn't tied into a cell, an actual cell tower.
No. You wouldn't want to tie it into an actual cell tower anyway. You tie it to a backhaul like an ISDN line or the internet.
Yeah.
And then it would pretend to be a cell tower.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, even playing around with things, you have to be a little bit careful.
Yeah. Cory Doctorow wrote, thank you. He said, Mr. Robot killed the Hollywood hacker. Mr. Robot marks a turning point for how computers and hackers are depicted in popular culture, and it's happening not a moment too soon. It really is. It's more than just, you know, Hollywood fiction. It really is a window into how, you know, hackers operate. It doesn't have all that silly stuff that you see in movies like, you know, Sneakers and Hackers. Type a few passwords and bring you're in. And I love that. Yeah.
See, we've still got so much work to do. I literally got involved because I hate throwing things at the TV. But whenever I see hacking stuff, I want to throw things at the TV.
I know.
But it's not just hacking. I was talking to some other friends of mine. And you look across other professions. There was an episode of MacGyver recently where he climbs out onto the bonnet of the car and opens it up at speed and then pours some unknown chemical into it to accelerate the vehicle, and then it drives faster. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, I just don't even. And then you've got, like, Scorpion and then trailing Cat 5 cable out the back of a jet as it goes over a runway for someone to plug into a laptop. Until these things are dead and done, TV is not safe.
Your colleague at Cloudflare, John Graham Cumming, actually has a wonderful Tumblr of source code as seen on TV, because you always see the stuff scrolling by, and I guess he freeze frames it and tries to figure out what is that. A lot of time it's just web page source code that somebody pasted into a window and so forth.
Every time a new episode of Mr. Robot would come out, I would jump straight onto John's blog just to make sure.
I love it. What do you like to do you do much coding these days?
I don't actually. I'm getting ready to do another car project, so I'm making very boring piles of documents, working out how I can clear my front lawn because I'm going to need to strip a car on it.
Oh, your poor wife. How old are your kids?
They range from 15 down to 8.
Oh, they're lucky.
Oh, they love it. They also love the fact that nobody bullies them online at school.
You do know who my father is.
There was one brief daddy's coming to get you incident, at which point I was asked, please not.
Please don't. We're talking to Mark Rogers. It's really great to have him on. He is on Twitter at Mark W. Rogers, if you want to follow him. The Ramblings of a Mad English Hacker. He is head of security operations for DEF CON, head of InfoSec at Cloudflare. And we're going to have more. I want to talk about car hacking in just a little bit. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you're a geek, you know the last thing geeks want to do when you're geeks buy houses, geeks refi, but what you don't really want to do is have to go hat in hand to a mortgage lender and bring a banker's box full of papers. Paper? What's that? Well, you're going to love Rocket Mortgage. First of all, it's from a very trusted name in home loans, Quicken Loans. They are superb. I think last I checked, $92 billion worth of home loans. And more importantly, from our point of view, if you go to quickenloans.com/triangulation, look at all those J.D. Power customer satisfaction awards year after year, every year for mortgage origination, mortgage servicing. People love Quicken Loans. And geeks love them, too, because they've created a new product called Rocket Mortgage, which is an entirely online mortgage approval process. No more going to the bank. No more going through the attic to find pay stubs or bank statements. You submit everything electronically with a touch of a button. And because, well, computers, you're going to get turned around in minutes. You will get a loan approval in minutes, and it's a loan tailored to your situation. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time. You can completely control this and get approval fast. So whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance, lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. They have done this right. QuickenLoans.com/triangulation. QuickenLoans.com/triangulation. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage at QuickenLoans.com/triangulation. triangulation. Mark Rogers is our guest. He is a hacker, proud of it. Mad English hacker, he says. He, you may have seen his femto cell on Mr. Robot, head of security operations at DEF CON, getting ready for August. How many DEF CONs have you been a part of?
This will be my 19th DEF CON.
19?
Yeah.
Wow. So you got involved very early on. Chunky. They call you Chunky?
No, C Junkie.
Oh, C Junkie. Oh, good. I misread it. Thank you. Okay. CJ. He's been a goon for more than 15 years. What is a goon?
So anyone who is a helper who wears a red shirt, they call them the goons.
You're the goons. And what's the SVC you're talking about?
Security Vacation Club. It's a sort of a secret little club for the top researchers, people who get awarded large amounts of bounty to go places.
So you're a Security Vacation Club cardholder, official.
Yes.
So you get invited, funds places to advise people on security.
Places like, you know, there's hacking conferences in Chennai. There's at least one in Maui.
Nice.
There's one in Antarctica.
What? So, wait a minute. There's a security conference in Antarctica?
Yep.
How do you even get there?
Takes a while.
And how big is this conference?
Only a few hundred folks, but
what?
How big do you need it to be?
What? What fun is that? That's my last continent. I'm dying to go. Maybe I can come to the security. Now, you probably don't like a lot of civilians hanging around, right? We just get in your way.
It varies. So DEF CON, we want anyone to come.
Right.
We want people who are just starting to come, get a feel for it. We want every type of journalist to come so we can help them understand. And DEF CON was the home of trying to get people to really see what the hacker community was and really understand how good we could be. I think Mr. Robot is something that spawned out of DEF CON and makes me really proud for that. On the other side, there are slightly smaller conferences with lower numbers, conferences like ShmooCon and DerbyCon. And the aim there is to try and keep the number of people down lower, so there's a higher ratio between talkers and people who are there to learn.
You have there's an event at DEF CON called Spot the Fed, where there's prizes to be won. but the feds, I imagine, have been active participants for a long time in all of these, right?
Very much. When it started, it was more of a, can you spot the undercover person hiding in our group?
Now they're proud. They wear a badge that says FBI.
Right. Now they'll come up and they'll say, hey, I'm here to pick up my Spot the Fed t-shirt.
I am the Fed.
That's what the t-shirt says.
Spot me. Not much of a contest anymore.
But so, it means there's a way for us to track all the feds.
Well, that's not a bad thing. How good are our hackers, by the way, our government hackers? Are they pretty good?
So it's, you know, one of those how long is a piece of string questions. Hackers come in all shapes and sizes and all sorts of skill. I will always say that a hacker who learnt by amateur from his own systems, from his own experimentation, is always going to run rings around a hacker who learnt at a school. Because there's a big difference between hacking from the heart and then hacking from formulas that are in your head.
Right.
That said, I've seen phenomenal people on both sides. Government hackers used to make me a lot more wary. I remember when they first showed up at DEF CON for Capture the Flag. These guys were basically square haircuts, you know, same set of clothes, polished shoes, all acted the same way. Terrible. They sat down. They didn't do very well in the competition. They didn't blend into the environment. And they walked away looking sore and uncomfortable. But over the space of about 3 years, they really started to blend in and adapt the environment and just go with the flow. They went to the parties. They hung out in the hangout areas and spoke to people. I think it was within the third year they were coming first. And it just shows me that, at least in America, there are certain groups that have got the right mentality towards what we need to do to improve our critical infrastructure and what we need to do to improve the skills of the people who need to defend this nation. So I see things like, you know, Hack the Army and Hack the Pentagon with bug bounty programs. It kind of warms my heart. This is the direction I want to see things go in.
Yeah.
On the other side, there is stuff that still terrifies me. You know, I see laws like CSAR, and I see laws like proposals that will say, companies will be able to actively defend themselves. And I see things like the Wassenaar Treaty. And all of that stuff really scares me because it's all moving in one direction. It's saying that hacking is a natural part of warfare. And therefore, anyone who has that skill set should be considered an armed and dangerous opponent.
Ooh.
And that, you know, really want to end up in a situation where lethal force is being used against 16-year-old nerds?
No.
That's the direction it's going.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it makes researchers like me who are trying to walk the white line very nervous, because if suddenly making the tools that I would just make out of my head to probe a problem that I've just created in my head, if they make those tools illegal and threaten me with a 5-year sentence, I'm going to stop making them because I don't want to go to jail just to protect somebody else's code. I'll focus instead on other things.
Yeah, no kidding. Are they getting better because the government is hiring real hackers, or do they actively recruit at events like DEF CON?
Yes. On and off. Like, there are times when it's not permissible. So, for example, during the Snowden revelations, it was deemed to be a really bad idea to have a recruiting station there.
Yes.
They probably would have been burnt down.
Yes.
But I've seen them at various conferences pop up. And they do actively reach into our community. And honestly, when the NSA playbook came out and I looked at it, I recognized half of the stuff they've in there.
Yeah.
So if they're not part of us, they're certainly with us and they're feeding from us.
Yeah.
I think they don't trust us completely, which is why you don't see so many of us there. But some people cross over, and the ones that do make profound impact. Look at Peter Zatko. Mudge made such a huge difference, both testifying in front of the Senate and the work he did in DARPA. He literally paved the way for other people to do the same.
When did the Snowden revelations surprise you, or was it all stuff you pretty much assumed the NSA had?
It was pretty much all stuff I assumed the NSA had. What surprised me was how bad the problem was, how little control they had over the situation, and then the kind of chaos as they scrambled to deal with it later. I wasn't really surprised to hear that they were intercepting things like the telecoms networks.
Yeah.
I just spent 10 years working as a security executive in Vodafone. I've seen half of this stuff firsthand.
Right.
There were incidents that happened when I was there that literally terrified me. And all of it was a sign that nation states were doing stuff. So really not surprised. I was kind of glad to see some of it come out into the open, because I do think much of it needs to be discussed.
Yes.
But I was really unhappy with the volume that came out, the way it came out, and the egos that got involved. I felt that allowed people to detract from the actual message that should have come out, and it instead became a giant game of finger-pointing and politics instead of a real, come on, okay, let's look at the whole of the internet and look at how it's built, and let's start to think about what we need to do for tomorrow to make sure we don't make the same mistakes.
What kind of oversight would be appropriate? I mean, it's pretty clear that Congress doesn't really understand technology very well for the most part. Should it be congressional oversight?
That's a really great question. It's something that all of the countries in the world have to be part of. I think, you know, I look towards your legislative branches because I think they are the best place to do something about it. I recognize that they also are the people who least desire to do something about
it, or
in most cases, least understand it. But there are a few who I've spoken to who are really switched on and
Absolutely.
Who really want to talk about this one. I think Congressman Liu and Senator Al Franken were two amazing
Interesting. People. Interesting. How about Ron Wyden? He seems to be pretty...
He also seems to be pretty switched on. And
Patrick
and you
Leahy.
Can tell the switched on guys because they're out there talking about the issues.
Right.
And in some cases, you can see they're sort of stretching themselves as they go around it.
Yeah.
But they're at least trying. And that gives me some hope.
Well, and over time, I would expect more sophisticated, technologically sophisticated people would get into Congress, I would hope. And I know you're doing as much as you can to educate a new generation so that they have some. And the sad thing is you see our kids' age and your kids' age, mine are in their early 20s, who grew up with technology but have very little understanding of it. They're users entirely, and they don't really understand it.
Unfortunately, that's my generation and the generation after have that problem.
Yeah,
I see it all the time with friends of mine from school of the same age as me just look at me like, I don't understand how you understand that thing.
Right. And they think because they use it, they do understand it. That's maybe even more dangerous, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're just going through the motions.
Right.
But if you look at the next generation, you look at like beyond the millennials, and you look at like my kids as an example, they're terrifying. Okay, they have a slightly unusual dad, but
that's good. I'm glad they're terrifying.
I've refused to teach them hacking.
What?
My eldest, my 15-year-old, came up to me about 6 months ago. She said, I want you to teach me how to hack.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I tell you what, I'll set you these programming exercises, and I'll set you this goal. If you do it, I'll start to teach you the basics. And her her auntie, Kristen Padgett, came around with another copy of a really good hacking book and said, you read that and then we'll help.
So tell me, where did you start? What language did you start her with? What tasks did you start her with? What books did you start her with?
So I actually started her with C, Python, and there's a Media Lab programming language called Scratch.
I love Scratch.
And the nice thing about it is it's an object-oriented language that gives instant gratification. So if they want to build a maze, they can just go and build a maze.
It's small talk,
but if they
basically
want to do code, they can do it. Yeah, exactly. She's got a Raspberry Pi to build some stuff on.
Good.
And there's a book, I think it's literally just called Hacking, which is one of the early hacking books, which teaches you the art of hacking.
Truthfully, that should be enough. If she doesn't have the motivation to go beyond that, then it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really matter.
That's our point.
Yeah.
I don't want to force feed her things, because some of the exploration is where you also get the moral compass for how to handle it. You know, how do I now that I have a method for opening up everyone's email, how do I respond to that? What do I do? How do I behave in a sensible way? What are norms anymore? You know, there's some bizarre and unfortunate things I did when I had access when I was younger, and I kind of regret some of them.
But
I don't want my children to go through the same mistake.
It taught me. I do worry about this younger generation, because I feel like they've been brought up in such a detached way that so detached from real world experiences that they may not have those moral compass.
I had an encounter firsthand with that. There was a period of time where there were a couple of little groups that were attacking Cloudflare, and it was getting to the point where they got annoying enough that I thought, okay, I need to bring this to an end. So I did the in England with this advert for British Telecom, reach out and touch someone.
we have that too.
It's always been my ultimate countermeasure for someone is just reach out and touch them.
Yeah.
Make some kind of physical impression in their life so that they know that they're no longer anonymous and they're no longer hiding. And
good.
Whatever they do has repercussions.
Good.
And so I found this kid, his father runs some kind of trucking company in the Midwest. He's only like in his early teens. And he was basically just me tooing a bunch of stuff that he saw his other friends do. And so I had to pull him to one side and explain to him that I wasn't the cops, but I was something far, far worse. And that if he carried on doing what he was going to do, unfortunately, I was going to make sure that the authorities ended up knocking on his father's door. And he was terrified. He went offline for a couple of days. And I spoke to him later, and he sent me down. And now we talk maybe once every couple of weeks. And his views are just so jaded. And I see why. You know, he's lived in a poor family. He's not had all the advantages a lot of other folks have, and he's in this dead end town where he sees no future for himself.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, he's smart enough that he could reach out on the internet and get the attention of a $1 billion security company by doing bad things.
Right.
They need to learn that there is a power within them, and if they use it for good, they are going to be this generation's wealthy.
Wow, I hope that message goes out. I feel like there are a lot of young people who are just detached, lack empathy, really don't understand that there's people on the other end of that wire, and are, I think, cynical is a good word, jaded. And I worry a little bit about that. You said you worked for Vodafone for 10 years. And I'm not speaking specifically to Vodafone, but in the past, companies like AT&T have had very close relationships with government surveillance. What's your sense of the how big the highway of information is between private companies and government in the U.S.?
is huge.
Yeah.
I couldn't even begin to map it out. I mean, just the work that I did in Vodafone, obviously there are parts of it I still can't talk about because they're covered under the British Official Secrets Act. But there are aspects of it. We did a lot of work to support the government. We had a dedicated call center to protect them. We had a lot of information services. We were obliged as an operator in the UK to have lawful interception capabilities. And those lawful interception capabilities were managed by the lawful the law enforcement groups. So if they'd wanted to, they could happily listen into any call. And I imagine that's the same for anyone in Europe. They do have a very strong process that you have to follow to get a call. You know, the appropriate warrants have to be issued. The right people have to sign off on it. Then the equipment has to be enabled and off they go. But the sheer fact that those tools are there makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And we need to build an internet where that's not necessary. Yes, it's going to have downsides. You know, if you create secure messaging apps, there are dirty and scary people who are going to use those apps to do bad things. But we need to come up with ways to counter that as well. And that's actually, it's one of the things that makes me love the job I'm in. I like having big problems to solve. Just keep throwing those problems at me. And even if I can't solve it, I'll think about it and try and solve it.
Thank goodness. Good. All right. One last. Oh, Snooper's Charter. How did you feel about that?
Oh, God. I don't know what they're trying to achieve with these things, because the reality is the only people who are going to obey some of this stuff are going to be good guys.
Right.
And
the bad guys just go,
they're going to ignore it. And you've depleted the arsenal that the good guys could bring to bear to protect against the bad guys.
Good point. And with strong encryption out there, you know, bad guys could thumb their nose at this. I hope they're not sophisticated enough to really know how to use Signal and all that.
It's quite interesting little experiment going on at the moment in South Korea. So I lived in South Korea for about 5-6 years as a CISO doing some random projects when I left Vodafone. So I just wanted to get out of the West. And it's a crazy country. I absolutely loved it. But their technology is just insane. And one of the things they did was they didn't want to wait for SSL. So they came up with their own standard called Seed. And Seed is delivered via ActiveX. And they've built Microsoft architecture that's dependent on ActiveX and Seed the way to the bank. So if you want to go to a bank, you have to load an ActiveX component from a third party, not even from your bank. You have to give it admin privileges. You have to let it spy on your keyboard and all this shit, right?
That's a nightmare.
I predicted when I was there that this was going to bring South Korea's telecoms and internet industries crashing to their knees unless they fix it. Anyway, this year, one of the major trending campaign promises is, please make this go away and normalize with the rest of the world. And it just shows you bad decisions on cryptography like that can have major political and socio-economical ramifications down the line.
Well, I was wondering who's keeping ActiveX alive. Now I know. Let's talk about cars real quick, and then I'm going to let you go. You've been very generous with your time, and I'm having so much fun. I just really enjoy it. Mark Rogers is here. He is head of InfoSec at DEF CON. He's the security researcher at Cloudflare, we should mention. All head of InfoSec for Cloudflare, head of SecOps for DEF CON. We should mention that he's also, Cloudflare is also a sponsor or will be a sponsor on the network. We're very glad to have them. But just so you understand. Now, hacking cars is a hobby, not a profession for you. Is that right?
Correct.
Why cars? Why hack cars?
I've always wanted a car that I could have computers in, like since a kid. And I've always tried to, like, My first car, which is an Infiniti, I tried to put extra things into it. And you're only limited in what you can modify, and it was frustrating. And then along comes the Tesla, and it's like, this car has everything I want in it.
It's not a car. It's a computer on a go-kart.
It's a data center on a go-kart.
A data center? You have a Roadster?
No. I borrow other people's and dismantle them.
Oh, do you? I drive a Model X, and I was just it's funny that you should say that, because I was just talking to my wife, who wants to get an electric car this fall. And I said, well, the Model 3 will be out. She said, I'm not buying a beta vehicle. She doesn't like my Model X. Oh, you did talk on it. Oh, no, that was somebody else. Yeah. But
no, that was me.
That's you. Is that your pseudonym? He wrote an article about your talk. I get it. Oh, that's cool. So what can I do with my Tesla?
It's basically a data center on wheels, so the sky's the limit. Would you like me to customize the wallpaper? Do you want the song? Do you want the horn to play an ice cream tune every time you press the button? I could do that.
I want La Cucaracha.
No problem.
You could do that, really?
Yeah.
Yep. What's the OS?
It's Ubuntu.
It's not just Linux. It's Ubuntu.
Yep.
And how do you get into it?
That's where it gets a little tricky. I mean, it's a customized version of Ubuntu, yeah. So there are a few secrets. Getting into it, there's a couple of routes. There's a physical Ethernet cable, which you can plug into.
You're kidding. Where's the Ethernet port?
It's hidden just to the driver's side. If you pull the trim away, you'll see this kind of weird circuit port. It's disguised to look like something different. I think it's called an MJ11. But it's actually just an industrial. It's just an industrial. You have no idea what one of the downsides of hacking is: sitting there flicking through hundreds of thousands of pages of parts diagram to work out which part this thing came out of, and maybe identify the thing from the part. But once you plug into it, if you can work out what the password system is, which is kind of a hidden challenge thing where it asks you to identify yourself, then it'll let you have access.
But unfortunately, immediately phones home and tells Elon that you've done this.
And you think so?
I'm pretty sure it does. And then,
I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't really.
No, 100%.
You've not been caught.
The only reason I was caught was I demoed that you could drive a Tesla with an iPhone in front of Elon and JB.
Oh my God! But they sent all this telemetry back. I would think that one of the things they would say is, somebody just logged in. I guess they wouldn't necessarily correlate to that to whether you were in the service center.
So they do send a ton of telemetry, but you remember it's a 4G connection.
Right.
So they're limited in terms of how much telemetry they can send back.
Right.
So they send all the car stuff back.
But they don't send logs, system logs back, things like that.
No, but they're sending stuff like, you know, what's he doing with the accelerator pedal?
Well,
what's
I know
he doing
they know that. Because we had a problem and they said, well, let me look at the log. No, you didn't. No, you see. And of course, every time there's a crash, they say, well, he didn't have autopilot on.
They know the second you press your brakes, but they don't know the second you break into one of their machines. and one of the side effects of breaking into the Tesla was we didn't make too big a deal of this because we wanted to give Tesla time to respond. We found access to systems inside the Tesla factory from the car.
Oh, that's not good.
No, and obviously we didn't do too much with them because the last thing I want to do is like make a $100 million robot start throwing cars at people or something. But what I did see what systems were connected to the kind of area that we deemed to be authorized to see. And there was some really odd stuff, including one server, which we still don't know today what it does. All it's called is Knights Who Say.
Knee!
Yeah, if you connect to it, that's all it does. It floods you with knee.
It may be the entire purpose of that server.
Might be the most important part of the autonomous driving system that we know.
We just don't know. I do love the geeky sense of humor that Tesla, everything Tesla does is.
I think Tesla is an amazing company. Their car was hands down the hardest car for me to hack in the market. And I've played around with a few now.
Interesting.
They thought about security.
Good.
They put in place controls that you would expect to see in a normal office, not inside a car.
Interesting.
And they've left the future open so they can put in security that will make other cars look like jokes. They have a good chance of becoming the Apple of the autonomous world so long as they keep security on the top priority.
Right. Well, that's a huge relief, frankly. They're not just they're not putting all the telematics in the same CAN bus as the car's brake system and things like that.
Which is what everyone else has done.
I know. It's like we can only afford one network in this car.
I mean, I was dealing with inspecting one vehicle and then looking around, and basically the guy wasn't sure, the designer obviously wasn't sure which CAN bus to get up to, so he hooked it up to all of them. Because you've got a vulnerable system, like, someone might break into this, what do I connect it to? Everything, just to be
anything.
Sure.
Anything and everything. Wow.
It's like, how do you send a brake signal on this one? How do you not send a brake signal? This thing
how much storage does a Tesla have?
A lot. It has two Ubuntu systems. So the 7-inch cluster is a separate Ubuntu system. The 17-inch touchscreen is another Ubuntu system.
Really?
And that has a free RTOS system bolted onto the back of it. So you've got these two Ubuntu systems with an RTOS gateway that then seals the connection to the CAN bus, and then all the stuff hanging off the CAN bus behind.
Oh, that's nice. That's something most car manufacturers don't do, right? The CAN bus just is a pipeline to all the information everywhere.
Exactly. They actually thought, and you can only send sort of certain stored procedures through. So I can send a command that says wind the window down. But if I try to say and send a command that says wind the window up even though it's up, the car won't do anything. Yeah. If I try to sell the car a command, say, apply the handbrake when you're at 40 miles an hour,
Deeks.
It won't do it. The safety mode kicks in. The car slows down. You kind of lose control. Things shut down. And you're able to pull it over to the side. If I switch the engine off at speed, all of the safety systems remain functional. And you can guide the car to the side of the road. Very few cars have that feature. And I wanted to test it. And I also want to see, like, okay, you've got some security controls. How long before I can get all the way around?
Always a challenge. Did you?
Yeah, of course. but not every guy trying to break into your car is going to be someone with my sort of skills.
Thank God.
I said the same thing when I hacked Apple Touch ID on the first two phones that had it. They looked at me and they're like, why did you do it? I said, it was not to prove that Apple Touch ID is broken. It was just to show you that it's not a perfect security measure. Just like keys. I can pick locks,
right?
But we still use them. Why? Right. Because your average criminal on the street isn't going to have that kind of skill. He's just going to break a window. And
I've always kind of said that really, certainly that's the case with keys. They're more like a security suggestion.
Yeah.
It's an indicator that you don't want somebody to come in, and that if they come in, they'll be breaking the law. But it isn't really an effective deterrent.
You must be this tall to ride, is what I think that is. Yeah? And if they're tall enough, fair enough. That's what I've got insurance for.
Have you ever come across a system you couldn't hack?
Yes. Oh, all the time. One of the ones that's still in my box that I need to hack is Nest. God damn it, that thing annoys me.
Is that because it's well-designed?
Yeah. I know the guy who designed it. I went and met him to have a chat. He built it so it's got an almost impervious exterior. It's got an SSH client you can connect to.
Nice.
It loads new firmwares. It only talks to Google. And it's secure. It checks certificates. You can't man in the middle of it. I'm pretty sure if I went down to a hardware level, I could break it. But I wanted to do it from software. And it's good. And there are things out there like that where people have thought, how do I make this secure? And most importantly, how do I make this secure in the future? Because one of the biggest problems you're going to see coming in the next few years is all these fancy touchscreen controls in your fridge, in your house, in the fancy office you're in your car. They've all got a different life cycle to the one that the manufacturer was thinking he was getting.
Yes.
Most operating systems die between 2 to 4 years. Some last as much as 5. Most fridges are kept for at least 10 years.
Yep.
Most cars are kept for 10 to 15 years. Houses are kept for 20 plus 30 years. Buildings are kept for 50 plus years. And yet in all of these systems, you're going to put in place Ubuntu or Red Hat systems that will be deprecated long before the building even gets open.
Long-term support is a few years, not a few decades.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do you patch something like that?
Yeah, I feel like we're headed toward an IoT meltdown. It's not even this mismatch between life cycles. It's really the companies don't even care, it seems like, in many cases.
A lot of them will just throw this thing out and say, well, when you can't support it anymore, buy a new part.
Yeah.
But the way the complex kind of ecological and financial chains work with these things, you look at the supply chain for something like a Tesla. Tesla, the reason they had so many vulnerabilities is because they're dependent on NVIDIA for source code and the operating system they use.
Right.
NVIDIA made a version of Ubuntu called Linux Tegra. But now, as a result, they're totally locked in. They can't change it. And they're working their way out of it slowly. But it meant they had like a dozen vulnerabilities on their car that couldn't be fully or equally addressed.
Right.
And we had to make tactical moves to make the car safe when we did our talk. As far as I'm aware, at least half of those vulnerabilities still exist in that car because it's too damn hard for them to change them. That's a problem we have to avoid for future cars.
What a pleasure talking to you, Mark. I wish we had hours and hours more. Mad English hacker Mark Rogers is head of security operations at DEF CON, getting ready for the August conference already. Head of InfoSec at Cloudflare, a legend in the industry as C Junkie or CJ, and pretty smart fella. Really a thrill talking to you. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you again soon.
I hope so. I'd love to talk again. We do triangulation every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. If you want to stop by and watch live, you can join us in the chat room or tweet at me. And I love to use those questions and comments back to our guests. That's why we call it triangulation. It's our guest, me, and you, the third leg of the stool. If you can't be here live, though, don't worry. I know a lot of you are listening on airplanes right now or in your car. You can always get on-demand audio and video of every show we do at twit.tv/TRI, or one of the many podcast apps. There's Twit apps on every platform, but there's plenty of podcast apps out there as well. And please do subscribe, because I think this is one of those shows you just don't want to miss. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye.